All right, you can't beat the Doors. That's what I always say. Love the Doors. Jim Morrison, all those guys.
Everybody tries to show me the door.
Well, you know, there's a reason for that, Hobbo. They're not being very subtle about it. Anyhow, just kidding. The Wahoos are number two in the land. We like that, but we want to be number one. When is somebody in the lousy SEC going to knock off those Kentucky Wildcats and their sloppy play? Because they throw the ball and kick it all over the gym, but somehow they escape.
Well, it's not like people haven't been coming close to two double overtime games this week, right?
Yeah, the Rebels and the Aggies.
At home, one on the road.
They had them down. All right.
We'll worry about Kentucky later.
We'll worry about them later. We can take them. All right, Chris Wright, I believe, is holding steady there. Chris, are you there?
Yeah, I'm with you. How are you?
All right, there you are. Tape delay there. Chris, what a big weekend in the ACC. I mean, Duke falls at NC State. Lacey goes bonkers. Kentucky nearly falls against Texas A&M. Rutgers upsets Wisconsin because Kaminsky, that giant octopus, whatever he is, he's 7'11" or something. UNC stunned Louisville. They never led until the very end of the game. Marcus Page drives baseline and throws up an ice cream scoop off the top of the glass, and everybody's holding their breath. It falls through. He falls into the crowd, and somehow the Tar Heels, with only four men back on defense, survive the heretofore unbeatable cards. I mean, you know, what's going on?
Yeah, and you can throw Oregon State beat Arizona late last night into there too. So definitely a wild weekend for the top 10, top 15 teams in the country, but Virginia escaped unscathed. Despite a pretty good test from Notre Dame up there.
You know, one of our listeners just texted in the Infinity Coaches Challenge is still underway, and Tony Bennett, UVA's head coach, is currently in fifth place as of today. I guess you can go on the four letter, that's ESPN, and go to Infinity 2015 Coaches Challenge and vote. We encourage all our listeners to vote for Tony Bennett. Carl Hess was given his walking papers for talking trash along the baseline to a prominent Wake Forest trustee of Indian descent. And what do you make of that? And will Coach K lobby to bring him back?
interesting to see him finally out of the ACC. You know, he's pushed buttons for a long time with a lot of different fan bases, and I guess finally picked on the wrong person. But ultimately, like, the thing I think most of when I think of Carl Hess is his love for the offensive foul call. So that's what I'll miss the most, is the random forearm or charge or whatever that gets called when Carl Hess is doing a game.
Speaking of refereeing, I thought one of the key moments in the game Saturday was when London was about to fall out of bounds and Tony was up screaming at the official to get a timeout call on the other side of the floor. And the referees granted Virginia the timeout. I thought Mike Bray was going to rip the back of his jacket. He was going so ballistic over on the Notre Dame sideline. But then the key thing is right out of that timeout, Malcolm knocks down a three to turn a one-point deficit into a two-point lead. So it ended up being a big play.
Yeah, that was huge. You know, you saw on the replay there on ESPN that Coach Bennett was calling the timeout before London fell out of bounds, but was not awarded the timeout until after he had fallen out of bounds. So that's how close it was. But you're right, he comes out of the timeout. That's one of Virginia's favorite looks. I don't think they've run it yet this year. They used to run it all for Joe Harris last year, but they went to that, and really the last 4 years, but they went to that out of a timeout. And with Malcolm knocking it down and then Anderson hitting a three-pointer in the corner on the next trip, Virginia really wrestled control of the game away during that key little stretch.
What has anything surprised you about the Virginia team this year as you look over the first 15 games?
Not particularly. I mean, they're pretty much who we thought they would be. Maybe the biggest surprise to me is they're a little bit inefficient offensively for longer stretches of time than I thought this team would be. You know, all teams go through droughts, I understand that, but this particular team looks like it has so many weapons that the extended droughts that they go through are kind of surprising to me. And the one that would be the best example might be at Notre Dame. I think the last 12 minutes of the half before the locker room for halftime, they only scored 12 points. No, only 8 points in 12 minutes, and that seems awfully low for a team with this many weapons. So a little bit surprising there, but otherwise they're exactly who we thought they would be.
I think you just stole that line from Dennis Green, the former NFL coach. But, Chris, talking about other events and activities and news from Charlottesville, Tom O'Brien, the now former associate head football coach, announced his retirement. There was some questioning on whether he might come back and coach the offensive line since Wackenheim took the VMI job. Eli Harold and then Max Vallis both have declared that they're going to apply for the NFL draft. And then out of nowhere, the UNC wide receiver graduates but has a year of eligibility, and he's transferring to Virginia.
Yeah, a lot of movement in the football program over the last several days, and I think here in the next couple of days you'll probably hear about some coaching replacements for the guys that have left. You know, you're getting awfully close to signing day for it to drag on much longer, so I think you'll hear something coming out of Virginia soon. But Virginia's defense has a lot to figure out, you know, with Harold and Dallas both leaving early, and then you lose Coley, Romero, and Anthony Harris all to, being done with their eligibility. They played 4 years. So that's an awful lot of playmakers on that defense, including the three leading sack guys in Coley, Vallis, and Harold. That's an awful lot to figure out on defense. You know, I think they can figure it out on offense with new coaches, and even though O'Brien's not back, there seem to be some too many cooks in the kitchen vibe coming out of the coaching staff on the offensive side of the ball. So it might be just better from that standpoint. I think the offense will figure it out. I'm interested to see who steps up on defense.
I couldn't agree more. All right, let's talk briefly about the NCAA championship football game tonight. What's your take on the big game?
You know, when bowl season gets here, I watch as little football as you can possibly imagine, although that's might be not too surprising because I'm a basketball nut. I watch more basketball than football, so I haven't really looked at it, but I would lean Oregon. The thing that stood out to me most about Oregon when they were here in Charlottesville last year is how well they block, not only up front, but then out in space. I think that's what really makes that offense go. They really make you beat blocks, and I'm curious to see if Ohio State can do that consistently tonight.
You know, I've predicted online today that I thought that Destiny's Child is really Ohio State. You know, when a third-string quarterback emerges as Cardale Jones at Ohio State, and they've got a running back that Elliott is a brute. I just have a funny feeling they're going to be able to keep the ball away from Marcus Mariota, who's, you know, all the pundits have labeled him the next coming in the NFL. That's usually the kiss of death, I think, too much pressure. And I think Ohio State somehow playing the dark horse role tonight is probably going to possess the ball and frustrate the Ducks, but we will see, right?
They certainly seem like a destiny-type team, you know, one that was outside looking in late in the season, had a couple of things break right to get into the playoffs, trailing big against Alabama early, found a way to come back. So they certainly seem to be on that destined path. But Oregon is so tough, and, you know, they've had experience in the national championship game once before, and I feel like they didn't really play up to what they thought they were capable of that first time. So I think there's a little bit of a urgency, chip on their shoulder kind of vibe coming out of Oregon this week from what I've seen.
You know, one challenge, and I'm not a football guy, but the one thing that was clear about Florida State is half the time they were trying to figure out what personnel to put on the field defensively, and Oregon was already running a play. So, I mean, you know, there was one touchdown where Oregon ran the ball in the end zone, and it looked to me like Florida State was trying to make a defensive change at that moment. So I think that'll be one of the challenges for Urban Meyer, but he's a pretty good coach, so I assume he'll have a chance to figure that out. But back to ACC basketball, Chris, I don't know, have you looked at the schedule looking ahead? Does anybody have an inside track based on favorability of schedule, or have you not checked that out yet?
No, I look at it some, and particularly from Virginia's standpoint, you know, who always gets the unbalanced tag thrown at them just because of, you know, how the patterns work out and all that kind of stuff. But they've got four games coming up that all look very winnable, and then the four after that is rough. Louisville, Duke, North Carolina, and then at NC State, four games in a row from January 31st through a little before Valentine's Day. That's going to be the crux of whether Virginia's, you know, in the race at the end of the ACC season or not. They've got to come out of that four-game stretch looking pretty good. And that doesn't mean that the next four aren't a challenge, because I think they will be, even though on paper they don't look as difficult as those next four. But I think that four-game stretch will determine if Virginia has a chance to repeat in the regular season or not.
Well, you know, not since I was in school, and that's a long time ago, sports
a
fans.
A really long time ago.
Not as long ago as when you played there, Hobbo.
Well, I was there with Mr. Jefferson. So.
You were wearing Chuck Taylor All-Star sneakers there, Hobbo. But getting back to it, back in 80-81, the Wahoos won 23 in a row to open the season. Ralph, Lee, Jeff, I mean, an amazing team. And can't forget Terry Gates. God, he would slug me. All right, can't forget Terry Gates, the enforcer.
Terry Gates and Jeff Jones and a few others.
I said Jeff and Jeff.
Oh, okay.
Othell and Ricky. I mean, there's a lot of talent on that team. Craig Robinson.
Well, you know, the thing that amazes me about Virginia, you know, going back to last January 1st, I think the numbers now are 36-3 is what the team's record is starting last January 1st. And at the level of competition they're playing, that is mind-boggling.
Not too shabby.
Absolutely. So,
Chris, let's pose a question to you. Clearly with Clemson at home, BC away, Georgia Tech at home, and VPI away, Virginia will be favored in all four games. So let's assume they hold serve and somehow prevail. They're at 19-0. Duke comes to town. There's a frenzied JPJ. What happens?
Yeah, I mean, the two before them that worry you the most are Clemson and Georgia Tech, because they both can grind it out with teams. We've seen early in ACC play that's true. And Clemson always plays Virginia tough. They're one team that Virginia only beat by five last year. So with all that said, I think they do win the next four. And then the showdown happens. And honestly, I think Virginia's better than Duke. I mean, I know Duke's got a lot of weapons and a lot of talent, but in the JPJ, with some of those Duke freshmen seeing the pack line for the first time, I think Virginia should control that game. It's the next couple that get tricky to me, at North Carolina and then at Louisville, look like a tall task. But through the home game at JPJ, I like Virginia to keep holding serve. That doesn't mean they're not beatable, because they are beatable, but I just like on paper how things look through that game on January 31st.
All right. When you're looking at the lineup that Tony Bennett has been putting on the floor, Atkins, Gill, Anderson, Brogdon, and Peranta has started. Shayok is next man up. Toby has, at times, he's gotten some starts, but in the last game, only 16 minutes. Evan Nolte, 9 minutes, and then obviously Isaiah Wilkins got some time away from the bench, 14 minutes. What do you see out of the lineup in these games ahead? Do you think he'll play more players in these next four games to try to keep Virginia fresher as they get ready to face the gauntlet of Duke, NC State, Louisville, and NC State?
Honestly, I think that's up to the players. You know, Coach Bennett has been pretty steady throughout his career that he plays eight guys, four post, four guard wing types. That's pretty much what we're seeing right now, an eight-man rotation with a ninth that sneaks in from time to time, whether that's a Devin Hall or an Isaiah Wilkins or whatever. Rarely does it get to 10 or 11 during conference play. So the only way that can happen is if the team is taking care of business in a way that he feels comfortable with leading the first half to sneak somebody a couple minutes, or that they're running away on the scoreboard late so that the last 6 minutes guys can put their feet up and watch some other folks get some experience. But typically, he plays eight with a ninth swinging in there from time to time. So I don't expect that to change if the games are close.
Yeah, I think that the game situation, I think, will dictate. And certainly, if the games are close, you can expect London Malcolm and Justin Anderson to play a lot of minutes, because you want to make sure you have your best players on the floor if the game's in question. But at any rate, Chris, as always, we thank you for your contribution tonight and look forward to your next visit.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, Chris, thank you so much. All right, we're going to head to break. We come back on the other side. We're going to have the Foss home team Olympic Sports Report and the LeClaire Ryan play of the game. So stay with us. This is Who's Talking.